go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour, this is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, so named for the Titanic intellects prevalent across the narrow spectrum, otherwise known as the right wing in the United States. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. We like to call what we do here Conversation Radio. At that home, you can find the Listen Live button. You can also find the link to the chat room. And if you've never been to the chat room, it's a rousing, fine, fun, good time. Free and easy to access. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Also at the website, you will find the PayPal button that helps keep all of this going, as well as the traditional mail address, which also helps keep all of this going. And that traditional mail address, in case you don't feel like going and looking, and you prefer not to use PayPal, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. A gentle reminder, don't make checks or money orders payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not see them. They go straight to our account, from which we hopefully pay the bills that we remain perennially behind upon. I was thinking about that. I think a lot of this goes back to the derecho of a little over a year ago. Wow. But anyway, we do have massive bills to pay, and your help is what makes it possible for us to remain on the air. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And like I said, it is Titanic Tuesday, and we have some Titanic examples of Titanic right-wing intellect. Remember the Titanic Tuesday gets its name from the day that a little right-wing 572nd tier yammerer over in Beckley declared to one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, snake-handling, floor-rolling, strychnine-swilling faithful that there are fossilized remains of sea creatures, mollusks, dare we say, in the rock strata of West Virginia because of the movement, and I quote, of the Titanic plates. Now, if you want to get out to your fossilized giant squids and giant scorpions and stuff, that's the responsibility of the Titanic gravy boat. Or perhaps the Titanic chutney jar, ginger jar, who knows. Anyway, that's, well, you know what Titanic Tuesday's all about. I want to get started with a note from Dr. John. The subject line, Dr. John's Gainful Employment Challenge. Bob, after 3 months of life without a paycheck, which I do not recommend, I'm back on the endless wheel of debt and debt service. It's that last part that's key here. Previously, I was only feeding into the former. It feels good to be able to pay some bills again. On that note, I've got bills I owe to the Horn. No, you don't actually send any bills, but this little commune is often the last thread to which my sanity clings. It's been a rough couple of months for me and my first family, the wife and the puppies, and I've relied on my Horn family to keep me going. It's not just this program, but also Dr. Bill and your own activist work in places like Wisconsin, Texas, and Washington, D.C. So I'd like to announce a $100 challenge. I'll match, dollar for dollar, the first $100 to come in tonight in any combination. A contribution of $10 will double, a contribution of $20 will double, and so on, up to $100. It's a great way to double your contribution and keep the conversation going. Thank you very kindly, Dr. John. That is almost unspeakably important, because in my absence here, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, well, basically what it boils down to is, you know, we'd need to be raising $600, because, yes, thanks to Paul last night at the close of the program, we actually managed to reach last night's goal and finish off Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. So that was magnificent news. Thank you, Paul. And 10 folks at $10, and Dr. John will match it all, or 5 at 20, or any combination thereof, 1 at 100, 2 at 50. You know how, right. So thank you very kindly to Dr. John for sort of leading the charge this evening. If we could raise that $200, it would mean that the hole from the rest of the week would only be $400. And hopefully, maybe, sometime between, now and Friday, some of that might roll in as well during the rerun stream, which would be very, very helpful. By the way, I've been corresponding with my genial host in Texas, down in Waco, Dr. Allen, whose notes you have heard here on the program before. And we're going to try, no guarantees, mind you, but we're going to try, depending on how the equipment situation plays out, we're going to try to stream the meeting Thursday evening at what would be 7:30 Eastern Time, 6:30 Central, 4:30 Pacific, of the Waco Friends of Peace, at which I will be speaking. I'll be speaking earlier in the day at Baylor University. And the idea of me speaking at the world's largest Baptist university, and me being a recovering Baptist, Southern Baptist, it's a Southern Baptist school, and me being a recovering Southern Baptist myself, well, I can't tell you how excited I am. I am truly excited. I'm going to be on my best behavior. I'm not going to inject any religion or religious ideas into the conversation. Dr. John understands that. He says, you're speaking at Baylor? God, if the fundies only knew what was coming. Hopefully nobody tries to anoint you or anything. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I am really, really looking forward to it. I've never been to Texas before in my life, and I understand from conversations with people like Texas Betsy and Dr. Allen and our buddy horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner that this is a lovely part of the state to see. And I think, well, I hope I'm going to be there for a couple of days, and if we can manage not to bomb Syria, well, there had been a planned peace rally there in Waco for Friday. It may or may not happen. I'm not so sure that we're not still on the road to war. I mean, war is good business. Rule of acquisition number 34, is it, Marty? And so I don't think the fine folks at Raytheon are going to back down perhaps as easily as it would appear that Bashar al-Assad may or may not have. President not sure will be speaking tonight. He's still due to speak tonight, right? Even though we may have a deal on the table? Yeah. And it is worth noting that if we can get... I mean, what a charming outcome. And I'm not trying to be a dick, but what a charming outcome. If Bashar al-Assad will let us take all of his chemical weapons into international possession and international monitoring, then we will happily let him go back to slaughtering the rebels and let the rebels go back to slaughtering his people and a whole bunch of innocent victims in the crossfire. They'll just be doing it with plain old boring mortars and rockets and bullets and machine guns and... Yeah, I feel much better. But anyway, no, I'm very much hoping to see a little bit of the countryside. One of the things that I'm hoping to do, among other things, is to take a little trip. I was looking at Google Earth, and it doesn't seem very far up the road from Waco, Texas, to a little village, a magnificent... what was once a magnificent example of the Central or Eastern European culture that arose in that part of what is now Texas, that little Czech dominated town called West Texas. West Texas means something to me, because after all, it was West Texas that experienced, in horrifying and cataclysmic fashion, an explosion of ammonium nitrate similar to what happens to the tune of about 5.5 million pounds of the stuff every day here in Appalachia. I don't know yet how many pounds of the stuff went off in West, but if I can go there and offer a little bit of, well, if nothing else, my respects to the innocent victims of that miserable, heart-rending memorial to deregulation and disdain on the part of the right wing, well, I hope I can do so. I will try to soak up as much history as I possibly can while there and report back come Monday. I'll be flying home on Sunday. About this time tomorrow night, I think, tomorrow evening, I should be going into Dallas-Fort Worth Airport and hanging around for a little bit, and then moving onward for the brief hop over to Waco. Like I said, I am terribly, terribly excited. I can't wait. I've been writing and drafting and rewriting and redrafting my remarks, both for the political science class I'm going to be speaking to, and for the remarks for the Friends of Peace. I try never to lose sight of the fact that when I go somewhere like this, well, I want to make sure that people understand the gravity of what I'm talking about. But I also want them to understand what deep reverence I have for the fact that they care enough to listen. And so that's at the heart and soul of what I've been working on. May take a day trip down to Austin. Just work in as much Texas as I possibly can in so short a period of time. And I'm looking for, and if possible, meet as many of you as humanly possible. We will, the Friends of Peace meeting, to which it is my understanding you are all welcome, if you're near Waco, is at Papa Rollo's Pizza in Waco at 6:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time Thursday evening. Well, Marty, thine airline is, well, mine airline is a secret. I'm trying to remember what airline. Yeah, no, it's not Delta. Can't get there from here on Delta. I want to go back to Dr. John's remarks for just a second here. Dr. John, in connection with his challenge for this evening, the gainful employment challenge by Dr. John, Dr. John says, if I could soapbox for a minute, I'd like to note that my own situation is not nearly as bad as what many of my friends and colleagues are facing. I've been fortunate enough to land a series of temporary jobs teaching at various colleges. These have all been at the actual faculty level. That's a rarity. Most wandering academics like me are stuck in what are called adjunct positions. Adjuncts teach more than regular or temporary faculty, and they're paid a fraction, as in a friend of mine earns $2,500 per semester. That's $600 a month for teaching 4 classes. Adjuncts don't have time to conduct research or write and aren't allowed funding to do so anyway. As permanent faculty jobs depend on research and writing, as well as teaching, adjuncts are basically locked out of ever landing a permanent job. The reason for this lies in the constant cuts to higher education funding that states have been pushing for the last decade or so. More and more, our college students are being taught by overworked, underpaid, junior PhDs with no hope and no prospects. This has to change. And it does indeed. I know I was most fortunate in that with a couple of exceptions, and those being lower level, 100 level classes, I had full tenured PhDs teaching, and it makes all the difference in the world. And the fact that I don't know, Dr. John, what would you call yourself? He says a wandering academic. Would you be an academic Ronin? I got to thinking about that word the other day. That was the word for a samurai who was attached to no master. An academic, and that's kind of the way I think of what I am here at the Horn. I'm sort of a radio Ronin. Out here operating independently, and yeah. Now, Ronins could sometimes get themselves in trouble, but sometimes they prove to be the noblest of the bunch. But you know what? You can't cook up a hearty pot of noble when, in the case of the folks that Dr. John is talking about, $2,500 a semester is what you're getting. And that's that. And you know what? I'll tell you a little secret, because I once investigated some of this. That little sheepskin I got as a result of the cup of coffee I had in law school, it qualifies me to teach on a collegiate level. And I tried to look into it a while back. And yeah, a community college writing gig, $500 a semester here in almost level West by God, Virginia. It wouldn't even pay for the gas to get there. So that's Dr. John's not kidding. So thank you very much, Dr. John, for providing the impetus for us to hopefully raise the funding needed to keep things afloat until I return. Dr. John also noting Titanic fossilized mollusks. Goes great with Titanic fossilized sweet taters. Paleolithic food porn. Delicious with sweet taters. You know, as a child, I saw those front bumper tags. In the South, in most states, you don't have to have a tag on the front and back of your vehicle like some states do, just on the back. And so that empty spot was often taken up by things like "Forget Hail" with the cartoon old rebel holding his Confederate flag, or the one that Dr. John just reminded me of. Just showed a picture of a possum and it said, "Eat more possum. Delicious with sweet taters." And it took me all the way up into my adulthood to figure out that that was a euphemism. No, Jim, I am not flying Air Erotica. Agnes would not allow me to fly Air Erotica, and I am grateful to her for that fact. So hopefully, whoever the Roger Ramjet is behind the stick of the flights that I'm taking tomorrow will not feel the urge to dive into any cumulonimbus clouds. No kidding. I pulled a muscle in my back in that craziness coming home from Detroit. Been eating Motrin like M&Ms. So, we'll just cross our fingers, okay? Lottie in the chat room. Now, Lottie, he says, Bob, when you return from Texas, I suggest you check into a medical facility for a Biblectomy. No, I'm gonna be running around with a bunch of good progressive people. I don't think there's any fears to anything to fear. No. And I've been doing my research, and well, lo and behold, guess who founded Baylor University? A hillbilly. Mm-hmm. Yep. A guy named R.E.B. Baylor. He started out in Kentucky in the low foothills of the Appalachians. Served in the Kentucky legislature. and then decided he wanted to go south, went down to the brand spanking new state of Alabama, swanned around there for a little bit, got himself elected to Congress there, then got booted out of Congress. He was a Jeffersonian Democrat. And got himself a commission when the last of the Muskogee people were driven out of Alabama. It was known as the Second Creek War, the people that white folks refer to as Creeks. They're actually the Muskogee people, and they were spread throughout the Southeast. They were pushed relentlessly westward, except for small pockets down in Florida, who eventually became, the Spanish called them Cimarrones, and because of linguistic differences, they wound up being known as the Seminoles. Yeah. But R.E.B. Baylor, having gone Indian killing and having run out of Indians, Jesus, can you believe it? Decided to go west and settled some in the vaguely Waco area, where he was a judge and he was a lawyer, and he was said to carry the law in one saddlebag and the Bible in another, for he was a fire-breathing hard-shell Baptist. Lottie, I don't know, Bob, you never know. The critters will come out. The NJV and the KGV species will come out from under a tumbleweed, and they're worse than ticks. Chiggers, right? You gotta asphyxiate them with a little bit of clear nail polish and pull off the nail polish, and a whole bunch of hair comes off your leg at the same time that the little chigger does, and it's stuck to the nail polish. So I know a little bit of the history of Baylor now. I know they will probably beat my beloved Mountaineers within an inch of our lives this year. Good God, that game against Oklahoma Saturday. I mean, look at that. We have a defense. Son of a gun. Then again, we have a quarterback who could not hit a receiver with a... with a water balloon at five paces. Then again, our receiving corps may very well have... What's the term in Spanish? Manos a piedos? Am I close? Hands of stone? Yeah. But no, I'm looking forward to the trip, and I think I'm going to be awash in some history, and I think I've got enough of, I think I've pulled together enough of a cultural sort of historic perspective that I'll be able to have an idea of the ground that's under my feet. I wonder if R.E.B. Baylor went to Texas because he figured there were some more natives to slaughter. I don't know. So, Titanic Tuesday it is. Well, okay. Thank you, Dr. John. Dr. John is a Texas native. He says, of course, you won't see Texas. The valley, the hill country, the Llano, the upper and lower coast, and the far west, all very different places. You'll have a great time, but there's lots more places that need to hear you. Thank you, Dr. John. Thank you. Maybe we'll come back with some new friends and some new and varied Texas accents to add to the conversation. You know, I ran across while I was in Wisconsin last weekend. I ran across the irrepressible Jim Hightower, and. We talked briefly. I told him about the ACAC. You know, if you ask me to pass the salt, I'll tell you about the ACAC, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, H.R. 526, in the House, and our effort is underway to try to get it introduced in the Senate. And I was telling him about the cruise missile equivalent, you know, 4,400 cruise missiles per day going off here in Appalachia. And he invited me to drop him a note, and I have, and told him how excited I was to visit his native state for the first time. So, I don't know what's going to come of it. Maybe he'll write back, or maybe he's just too busy. But, yeah, there's a whole lot of Texas to see. I didn't know Texas had a place called The Valley. I thought maybe there might be several. Oh, Dr. John, do you see what you've done? Now I have to go off and play Fascination with Geography after the program's over this evening. Upper and Lower Coast, I can guess that. The Llano, I don't know. The Far West, I get. It's the Far West, for instance, that fracking is going to deprive of all of its water. What is it, 30 towns out in the arid regions of western Texas who will have no more water because it was more important that the profiteers take it for fracking? Yeah. Mercy. But thanks for the reminder, Dr. John. I understand, Randy. See, you guys care, and it's really, really, it's really nice. Randy says, "Watch it, Bob. Those NSAIDs can do in your liver." True, but I don't know. I've got this cranky hang up with being able to move my back. I'm sure you can understand. But thanks, Randy. Thanks very much. Now, I'll tell you the truth, this being Titanic Tuesday. Well, it's not like I don't tell you the truth on prayer meeting Wednesday or more and Monday, but thinking, you know how my mind works. It's all over the place most of the time. And yes, anybody familiar with the Waco area want to tell me about the quality of Texas barbecue in the region? I'm guessing it's going to be awesome. And it'll probably be brisket. And I'm stoked. I'm truly stoked. I guess in Texas they barbecue more cow than they do pig. And in this case that's a net bonus. Here on this Titanic Tuesday, privatization has found its way in. Well, you know, of course, you know. Remember a couple of months ago when we found out that the People's Republic of China had decided to buy the single largest American pork producer, Smithfield Meats. Yeah. Now Smithfield Meats is the giant juggernaut corporate behemoth that swallowed up all kinds of different brands, things like Cumberland Gap and Smithfield Hams and John Morrill and just like 30, 40 brands. And the People's Republic of China have bought them. And as it stands now, I mean, for instance, down in Mexico and, frankly, in places like Tar Heel, North Carolina, and other locations, they have, you know, here in Appalachia, we have these vast seas of toxic coal sludge waste. Well, the Smithfield meat producers have, they call them lagoons, as if Gilligan is down there working on patching the minnow. They call them lagoons, and these lagoons are these vast cesspit seas of antibiotic and pig waste and blood and hey grandpa, what's for supper? Sorry. So they and they're nasty, and they're just they sort of turn into a self-breeding stew of vileness, and that's bad enough. But now that America's largest pork producer has been bought by the People's Republic of China, news breaks that the U.S. Department of Agriculture is going to introduce nationwide a new meat inspection program. Oh, goody! A new meat inspection program? You mean the meat's going to be better inspected? No. No, it's going to be worse inspected. How this happens in the age of... Well, stop it, Bob. How this happens in the age of Obama, when in fact this sounds like some sort of porcine wet dream from the dim leader administration, I don't know. but it's happening. Yesterday, the Washington Post had a story about how the United States Department of Agriculture, you know, one of those job-killing regulating agencies, you know, those job-killing regulating agencies that keep unscrupulous producers from just poisoning you when you're trying to have supper or a decent barbecue or something like that, pork chops, bacon. No, pork plants in the United States will now be able to use their own inspectors and not be bothered by any of those pesky USDA inspectors running around with their little purple stamps trying to make sure that the meat is decent enough for human consumption. Was it Sinclair Lewis who wrote The Jungle? Wasn't The Jungle about the horrors of the meatpacking industry in, say, Chicago at the turn of the last century? Yes, as a matter of, I do believe. It was along about the same time that Bismarck said the two things in life you don't want to see made are law and sausages. I think he was trying to make a comment about the lawmaking process, but along the way, yeah, sausage making can be kind of gross, especially if you're coming from a country that treasures recipes for things like Blutwurst. Blutwurst meaning blood sausage. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've eaten it, and no, it's not bad. But everything old is new again. The whole idea of having... slow down, Bob. Slow down. This is a piece of right-wingery, and it is pure genius, hence its presence here on Titanic Tuesday, where... Over the course of years, the number of USDA meat inspectors has dwindled and dwindled and dwindled and dwindled until right-wingers can say, well, hell, it ain't like there's very many of the little fellers left anyway, and they so overworked they can't hardly do their jobs in the first place. So let's just get rid of them and let the industry self-report and voluntarily comply. I remember first hearing those phrases like that, self-report and voluntarily comply. I remember first hearing those back during, I think, the first 4 years of the tormented eight under which this country was subjected to the mighty, mighty brain of dim leader. Voluntary compliance, because America's corporations are good citizens and they can be counted on to do the right thing by the American people as long as the doing the right thing for the American people coincides with them being able to make a fast buck every time they turn around. See how it works? So really, really, the pork industry in the United States, according to the Washington Post, is going to be able to replace USDA inspectors who are not answerable, at least in theory, to the industry, but rather are answerable to we, the people of the United States, working tirelessly day in and day out, hammer and tongs, hand over fist, on that more perfect union. No, they're going to be replaced with private employees from inside the corporations who will quiver and soil themselves at the mere thought of not passing some piece of rancid pork on into what we lovingly refer to as the stream of commerce. Here's the fun part. It's been tried before. It was tried in Australia. It was tried in Canada. When they tried it in Canada, a Canadian company wound up recalling 8.8 million, yes, million with an M, 8.8 million pounds of beef because they had been contaminated with E. coli. generally the pathogen strain that makes people sick and die. E. coli 157H7, I believe it is. And when meat is contaminated with E. coli, what that means is that the meat has come in contact with feces, poop, dung. And has continued to live and thrive and grow there in that particular medium. 8.8 can you? Wow! So this self-reporting and voluntary compliance wound up putting 8.8 million pounds of poisonous meat into the stream of holy commerce in Canada. New Zealand gave it a try, self-reporting. And government inspectors in New Zealand warned that the meat produced at those plants there is at times, well, contaminated. Ian Baldick is a representative of the inspectors union in New Zealand. They have one of those. I rather like the idea. Ian Baldick said, "Tremendous amounts of fecal matter remain on the carcasses. Not small bits, but chunks." Man, there's a special resonance to the word chunks when they're talking about chunks of that on meat that is intended to be consumed by real live human breathing, hopefully not wanting to be sickened unto death people. Not small bits, but chunks. This goes all the way back to more and more we're finding out that it does. This goes all the way back to 1997 in the Clinton administration, America's best Republican president in recent memory. It was in 1997 when the U.S. Department of Agriculture let five pork plants take part in something called the Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Point-Based Inspection Models Project. Mr. Orwell, you're wanted in the euphemistic naming department, Mr. Orwell. And they didn't just get to participate in the Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Point Based Inspection Models Project for a couple of years to find out if it was failure. No. There's not enough. That's too short a period of time. You really don't get a sense of the manifest magnificence of the failure unless you go let it go on for a decade and a half. And over that decade and a half, three out of the five plants that were permitted to participate in this very same program we're talking about now that is going to be rolled out to every pork producer in the United States of America, three out of five of those plants were, well, it turned out that they were among the worst, most vile, filthy, feces-laden, meat-contaminating plants in the country. The General Accountability Office, which used to be known as the General Accounting Office until Mr. Orwell got hold of it under the Dim Leader administration, wrote a report last month, and they said, you know what? We're having a real hard time over here at the GAO recommending that anybody ever consider that this plan and this method should go national. So naturally, the United States Department of Agriculture said, cool, let's roll. Let's roll. I mean, this is September 10th, and I'm getting on a plane on September the 11th. This is September, so we can say things like, let's roll. So you're thinking, all right, okay, as much as I love it, I'm giving up pork. No more pork for me. No, thank you. Don't want to eat meat that somebody whose paycheck is dependent upon saying, no, it's clean, boss, when it isn't really. No, you don't want to. Sorry, you lose. Because guess what? This particular theory, plan, project has so spectacularly failed upward that we're going to do it for chickens and turkeys later this year. It is a lovely poulet that has been lightly basted in the chicken poo, rolled in the flour, cooked to a delightful temperature of a rare 115 degrees, served to you on a plate, and will cause a massive vomiting. It is delicious. It is also highly profitable. Parce que pesky, annoying federal job-killing regulators are no longer in the process. What the? This is a part that the USDA is a part of the executive branch of government. Nobody is making the Obama administration USDA do this. Except they are. Because if you're in the middle of a great big honkin' sequester, which translates to wreck of the American people, well, you just ain't got the money no more for paying USDA inspectors to run around with their little purple stampers, take their little electronic, I don't know, ultraviolet thingamajigs, and, nope, sorry, no, this pig's covered in poo, can't go. You don't get the little purple stamp today. We can't afford it anymore. Because the Republicans understand that not just putting every shit-sodden pig out into the stream of commerce, well, that's bad for job creating. apparently I have, we've created a convert. Randy in PA writing, you know, I love bacon, but unless I can get a hold of Benton's, it is now off my list. And now other pork products are off my list. I eat a lot of hummus nowadays. I know the feeling. You are far better off, however, buying your... Okay, can we have this little food porn moment of candor? You like hummus? Buy your chickpeas dry. Rinse them well. Soak them. Cook them. Then go from there making your hummus. Don't buy the stuff that's in the store because, for all you know, with the consolidation and absorption and the corporate monkey bit, for all you know, your hummus is made in a plant that, well, never mind. I love hummus too. But yeah, Benton's bacon is magnificent. And you call them and talk to them, you know you're talking to real people who really care about what they're doing. As opposed to, say, the Smithfield Meats plant in Tar Heel, North Carolina, where 16,000 hogs are slaughtered per day. Can you imagine the speed of that assembly line ripping through that plant? That's why it's one of the most dangerous jobs in the country. And, of course, well, it is necessarily done by immigrants who are desperate for the work. Yeah, not Randy. Don't give up. Don't give up. He says, I'm trying to make my own hummus, but I can't get hold of the sesame tahini. G- get hold of the sesame seeds, and you're well on the way to having the tahini. You can do this. You can do this, Randy. Dr. John noting, of course you can trust pork producers. In college, I worked for a time doing phone surveys. I remember one where we were calling people in Indiana, that would be Talibandiana, on behalf of the Talibandiana Pork Producers Association. And no, wait, that's beef. One question was, do you agree or disagree with the following? Pork producers are good citizens. Over and over, says Dr. John, I got variations on the following response. Good citizens? Well, heck yes. My cousin works for Blank Pork Company, and he's a good Christian man. So what do you worry about, Bob? I'm worried that the healing hands of faith are not sufficient to deal with a nasty-ass outbreak of E. coli, or for that matter, trichinosis. My whole approach to pork was ruined early, what was it, fourth, fifth grade? When the teacher told us about the trichina worm? Oh, hey, Randy, note from Dr. John, hummus secret. After soaking, drain and heat the chickpeas in a pan with a tablespoon of baking soda, and then cover with water and boil. They turn out so smooth. Ooh, I'm going to use that trick, too. Thank you, Dr. John. Kate got us going on Dr. John's challenge this evening, and thank you very much, Kate. With a note, Kate says, thanks, Dr. John, and congratulations on your employment. I wish I could audit some of your classes. I appreciate your written contributions to the Horn. And then, Bob, Baylor? Too cool. It's a beautiful campus if you can get past the undercurrents of fundy stuff. It made me shudder every time I was there. Accents. There are many. You have to be there for a while to discern where a person is from. It is easy to insult a native by asking, are you from blank? Likely, you will be mistaken. Barbecue, Bob, will not taste a bit like you're used to, especially the white sauce from the Carolinas. No, the white sauce is from Decatur, Alabama, Kate. Come on. Too bad you won't get a chance to head to Lee County to visit Dime Box, and you will miss the wildflowers. The vast flatlands of the West out by Amarillo and Lubbock, they talk real funny over there. Some of the most beautiful rest areas on the highway system in the United States. Sending you good wishes for your trip. I'm sure you will be smitten by what little bit of the Lone Star State you will visit. Hurry home. Signed, Kate. Way up on the Front Range in Montana, but well-traveled in Texas. Randy responding to Dr. John, that's the thing, Dr. John, you're worried because he is a good Christian man. There's that. So, I don't know. You can't hardly go to a story like this USDA thing. And what a lovely idea. Do you see it? I mean, this plan was rolled out in 1997. And that gives you a little idea of how long... a lot of us are only paying attention to right-wing things that have bubbled up to the surface from the I don't know, Mordor depths of their little idea mills. And it took 15 years to do it. But imagine that. Somewhere... in the halls of the United States Department of Agriculture in 1997, some probably Koch-funded or Heritage Foundation-funded, remember, the Congress still was in the clutches, and it is again, of some wild-eyed Republicans. In 1997, there were some filthy Republican lobbyists walking around the USDA saying, you know, I think we can trust America's pork producers to rinse the shit off the pigs. I mean, my God, how hard can it be? Why do we gotta have some jackbooted government thug a-standing there making sure that the crap gets washed off the pig?
I mean, ain't the American people got sense enough to rinse they meat before they cook it? Honest to goodness, this is big government gone completely out of hand and around the bend.
And a Clinton administration USDA official said, I agree. Let's start a pilot program. Let's make sure that no USDA inspectors inspect the meat and see how it goes. And we'll pass this along to the Australians and the New Zealanders and the Canadians. How about maybe the Chileans and the Argentinians and the Mexicans? Somehow I don't think this is going to play out very well in the grand scheme of that whole more perfect union thing. Nor is it going to work very well. I don't think we're going to be able to shoehorn this into achieve domestic tranquility or provide for the general welfare. And when you've taken the USDA inspectors off the lines at the pork plants, I'm pretty damn sure that you're not providing for the common defense anymore. Because, see, that's one of those things. We read in the preamble to the Constitution, provide for the common defense, and we think, oh, armies, marching. What was the one thing that the framers of the Constitution feared almost above all others? Hint, standing armies. They didn't want one. Or if they had to have one, they didn't want much of one. They figured they could call up the militia if it was necessary. So you got to wonder if provide for the common defense in there includes other things besides war and guns and stuff. Well, by God, in 21st century America, it sure does. Because you know what? Let's get all the way right. It's September the 10th. Tomorrow's September the 11th. And let's get all the way down to the ground. I fear America's pork producers and America's beef producers and America's chicken producers and America's turkey producers a hell of a lot more than I fear some dude whacked out of his mind on religion over in the Middle East. Just on kind of an immediate level. And though I am no statistician, and if I worked at it for the next 1,000 years, never would be one then either, I'm guessing you've got a significantly higher likelihood of being badly poisoned, if not killed, by an improperly inspected hunk of pig in this country, or chicken, or beef, or turkey, or lamb, than you do being taken out by some religious zealot who marches into your local Walmart with a dynamite belt strapped on and reduces it to a heap of smoke and rubble. And this kind of plays into the whole Iraq, see how easy? Syria thing too, doesn't it? I don't give a tinker's damn what the geniuses at the Pentagon or the NSA or the FBI or the CIA or the ABC or the MOUSE say about threats from Syria. I live here. And I know damned good and well that just throwing a hunk of meat on the grill in this country is a dicier proposition than rolling the dice on whether or not some Syrian or Hezbollah guy or what have you, or some well-financed thug that's been handed a passel of money by the Saudis or the Gulf States emirs or the Israelis or any of those. This is the United States of America in 2013 when dinner is dangerous. Sorry, I'm yelling. It's bad enough that we let this program go for 15 years and found out it was a miserable failure, that the Canadians tried it and failed, that the folks in New Zealand tried it and said, oh no, the pigs are coming through with large chunks of feces still on them. That's bad enough. But somewhere, working within the government and probably with half his mind lobbied away by K Street punks, there's some upper-level bureaucrat who says, well, so what if 60% of the plants turned out to be the worst in the country? I mean, well, that means there were 40% that were okay. All we got to do is get the 40% to show the 60% how to do it right. And the little, you know, the little K Street bastards rub their little hands in front of their faces and say things like, excellent. I'd kind of like to hear a speech from President Not Sure on how we're going to keep America safe from the corporate profiteers of the pork industry than I want to hear a speech about how we're going to keep ourselves safe from Syrians? I mean, it's not like Sargon's going to come rolling across the Atlantic Ocean in a chariot. Randy in PA, you know, Bob, I just remembered, we may have just run afoul of some sort of ag gag law. Oh, dear. Probably are. The first rule of pig poop is not to talk about pig poop. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. By the way, I mentioned that Kate was the first to kick in on tonight's $100 challenge, the gainful employment challenge from Dr. John. We only need $80 more. 8 at 10 bucks, 2 at 40, 4 at 20. Yeah, this is doable. Heck, dare we hope that maybe we would even run on past that? Sure would be nice. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And damned if I haven't gone for a waller for about an hour now. Where does the time go? No telling. But let's open up the phone lines, 304-658-3333 on Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And that's just one Titanic Tuesday story. I still got David Barton wandering around. I got, oh, let's see, a dude in New Jersey. Well, it wouldn't be any fun if we didn't have a guy from Texas, a Titanic intellect from Texas. Thomas Kersting on a New Jersey story, another Titanic intellect. And, you know, I have made it a point. I mean, I really, really tried to stick to, I set a few, restrictions around stuff that we talk about here. And one of the things that I have decided, I mean, for instance, we try not to talk about Godzilla from Wasilla. And way up on that list is not giving free publicity to Anthrax Coulter. Don't worry. The pork non-inspection program will also miss the anthrax while we're talking about it. But I can't leave this one alone because this is so vile and so hateful. And so poisonous. I mean, this is shocking even coming from Anthrax Coulter. She's got some new book out. Hell if I know the title of it. But she actually strung the following words together while appearing on Radio Rwanda. I'm not going to play you any audio. Sit down. I trust you're keeping a handy supply of tennis balls nearby. Sit down. Bite the tennis ball. Duct tape the tennis ball in. Duct tape one hand down, and then sort of do your best with the other hand because you're going to need it in a minute. Someone, you have any idea how difficult? I mean, I'm really resisting this. I got a block. I got these words, and I got 2013 on the calendar, and the two are in direct conflict. Responding to the horrors in Syria, and I'm not just talking about poisonous gas, I'm talking about the horrors, I don't know, of seeing your child stitched into pieces by a conventional, entirely acceptable machine gun. She said, to the extent that she refers to a human being and to the extent that she is one, someone needs to explain to me why gassing Arabs is such a bad thing. I mean, aren't these the same people that attacked us on September 11th? Look, the system is working. Arabs are killing Arabs. And that means in the future, there will be fewer of them trying to kill us. I say we send them all the chemical weapons we have and let them sort it out among themselves. Hopefully, when it's all over, we'd be left with some empty space to colonize. Personally, I'd like to see megachurches and Home Depots outside Damascus. You want to know how bad this was? It was so bad. You know who she said this to? She said it to Sean Hannity Job, the life support system for a haircut. And even Sean Hannity, and this is as close as he could get to actually displaying the existence inside his being of anything resembling a conscience or ethics or morals, the Hannity Job said, "Don't you think that's a bit short-sighted? I mean, it seems to me like you're advocating genocide. How can you possibly defend that position?" To which Ann Coulter responded, "This isn't genocide. This is more like Breaking Bad, when Walt sees Jesse's girlfriend choking on her own puke and doesn't help her. It's enlightened non-interference." What the hell do you call that? Brian Kilmeade got horrified and said, "Yes, but these are innocent human beings caught in the crossfire of a terrible civil war. Don't you feel any empathy for them at all? I mean, remember the other day when John McCain was getting mad at Steve Doozy or Bill Brian Kilmeade or whatever when they said, 'Yeah, did you hear that? He said, Allah Akbar. I don't know that I want to support somebody like that.'" And John McCain was even a little flummoxed by that and said, "Well, I mean, they're Muslims. I mean, they're moderate Muslims. They're Muslims, but they're moderate Muslims." That sort of damning with faint praise effect. So, Kilmeade said, "I mean,
Arabs are just as human as we are and should be entitled to the same level of dignity and respect. Right? Right? As if he wasn't quite sure that Arabs are just as human as we are. Right? Words like that remind you why it is that some more enlightened nations like Europe, European nations, have said that there is a line not to be crossed in civil discourse. Canada has done the same thing. There are things out there that are simply termed hate speech. Speech that is so inherently vile, so utterly filled with hate and opprobrium, that it can serve no legitimate purpose. It's kind of like, what was it, Potter Stewart, who said in trying to define obscenity, "I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it." This is that. That same standard sets forth that with regard to obscenity, it has to display absolutely no redeeming cultural, political, religious, or artistic merit whatsoever. And thus, I ask, can anyone look at a statement like, "Someone needs to explain to me why gassing Arabs is such a bad thing"? I mean, aren't these the same people that attacked us on September 11th? Look, the system is working. Arabs are killing Arabs, and that means in the future there will be fewer of them trying to kill us. Tell me, where in that statement is there any redeeming social, political, cultural, religious, or artistic value? Do you remember when right-wingers like Ann Coulter had a hissy over Piss Christ, the art piece that showed a crucifix with Jesus on it, submerged in what was said to be a jar of urine? You remember when they had the hissy over the painting of the Madonna, the Blessed Virgin, done out of elephant dung? Do you remember the poop hemorrhage the right wing had over Robert Mapplethorpe's homoerotic photography? But when this harridan says, "I say we send them all the chemical weapons we have and let them sort it out among themselves. Hopefully when it's all over we'd be left with some empty space to colonize. Personally, I'd like to see megachurches and Home Depots outside Damascus." Ann Coulter, spokesperson for fundamentalist Protestant Christianity. She wants megachurches outside Damascus. Ann Coulter, spokesperson for capitalism. She wants some Home Depots outside Damascus. Can anybody point to any redeeming social value in those words? Or are they just
pure, unmitigated hate, whose sole purpose is to inflame more hate. And if that is indeed the answer, then can we have a discussion about whether there is any redeeming social value in creating more hate? Dr. John is trying to find some sort of an explanation for this kind of crap. And he says, I have a pet theory that she's really a performance artist. And her whole persona is simply an elaborate performative commentary on the worst tendencies of conservatism. I'd like to think the same about the Westboro Baptist Church. Assuming that's not the case, I'd suggest the best approach to her, and the one that has the best chance of hurting her, is to simply ignore her. Perhaps, though, we could treat her as if she's a performance artist. You know, read her quotes, and then we'll all have a good moment of reflection that, yes, there's a strain in our body politic that thinks just as she does. It's even more deliciously meta when she manages to shock the conservative media. I guess this sort of thing is fun in a way, but my basic feeling about Coulter is sadness. Because if it's all a joke, nobody seems to get it. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, a note coming in from Jack in Shreveport. Maybe this would be a good time if you've never experienced Dr. Bill before, to go and do so. Subject line: Barton, David Barton. Wow, did Dr. Bill take down Barton today? It will be up for it'll be posted for downloading and podcasting over at the subdomain for Dr. Bill at whiterosesociety.org. I strongly suggest you maybe listen to today's installment simply because Dr. Bill has done something in such a way nobody else has ever done. I mean, it's one thing to, for instance, respond to Ann Coulter, as I did, or perhaps as was recently done when Dana Perineal, former White House spokescreep, suggested that she was sick and tired of atheists and would like for atheists to leave the United States. One of the other talkers said, "Well, why don't you leave the United States?" Okay. Then there's Dr. Bill, who does not so much critique a charlatan, a fraud like David Barton, as he does deliver a 2-hour-long crushing brief against him. If you have never done it before, run over to whiterosesociety.org and download Dr. Bill's program from today. You will be glad you did. And of course, Dr. Bill is on the horn, and this program's because of you. And thank you very much, Sal, for taking us up to $30 on Dr. John's Gainful Employment Challenge. Thank you very much. Only 70 bucks to go. I think we can do it. I certainly hope we can. Otherwise, well, I may not have a horn to come home to. We may not have a horn to tune into come Monday. I wish I was joking, but I'm not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jeremy, what's happening?
You really outdone yourself tonight with your coming up with audio clips, or not even that, but just things people have said that are shocking, even though they're not really shocking.
I wish they were, Jeremy.
I've come to expect them. They're still appalling, and there's something terribly wrong with the fact that the SEC will throw a fit if you say fuck or shit on air, but will that kind of stuff air like it's nothing?
Right, and that's my whole point with trying to come to an understanding of the idea of hate speech. And frankly, if we take what you started on just now, Jeremy, and extend it a little further,
You cannot yell fire in a crowded theater. Well, at this point in time, the entire United States is a crowded theater, and statements like Ann Coulter's aren't just fire. They're the fire's right next to you. Everybody riot.
Her statements aren't fire. They're more like Agent Orange or whatever, Agent Orange, whatever it is from Vietnam. That's what she is. She spreads it. Because the psychos that will listen to Sean Hannity, even if they have half a brain, will kind of, like you said, he took a half step in the direction of, hey, maybe that wasn't a good idea. Well, he didn't completely condone it and say, hey, should we not call for more violence?
Exactly.
I mean, which doesn't surprise me there either. I don't expect it from him. She is, in my mind, worse than, in some ways, Beck and even Rush, because she'll say stuff that's so off the wall and just so, like, kind of like that kind of value to it. And nobody says anything or calls her off it.
Right, and insofar as this was said on Radio Rwanda, you know that you have an ironclad guarantee, Jeremy, that there was some significant portion of the Radio Rwanda viewing audience who said, she's right.
Right. And the difference between her and Limma and Beck is that Beck and Limma, and even Hannity to some extent, if they say something like that, they'll pretense it with, hey, I'm just kidding, it was just a joke. Whereas she'll say it deadly serious if she wants to happen tomorrow. And I'm not saying what they're saying is right, but she doesn't even hold back. She says it just horrible things. And I mean, to say, isn't it Arabs that attacked us? Yes, it was Arabs from the same country that had their members so far shoved up our butt comes out our mouth.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, no, in answer to her question, which was meant to be rhetorical, it was meant only for the little bobbleheads who view Radio Rwanda to just nod. No, these are not the same people who bombed us on 9/11. Not by even a remote stretch the same people.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, too. But yes, it's the Saudi Arabians. I mean, 9 out of the whatever hijackers came over here came from Saudi Arabia, the original destination.
I mean, it proves that we still have a 9/11 problem, Jeremy, because it was yesterday when we had the triumvirate of twits, King and Bachman and Gomer, declaring that the Muslim Brotherhood did 9/11. Now Ann Coulter says that either Bashar al-Assad or perhaps the Iranian-backed, what would Ronald Reagan call them? Freedom fighters, bombed us on 9/11. None of which is true. But then again, in 2001, well, through some really skillful lying, the Dim Leader administration had half of this country hoorahed into thinking that Saddam Hussein did it.
I've told you that I work in some sensitive places. Even though I'm not part of them, I'm a contractor, I hear things. And today I heard from someone who, I guess he thought well of George Bush and his actions in Iraq and Afghanistan. I can understand Afghanistan and Iraq. None of us understand. But he said if he was still in power, he wouldn't be putting up this bullshit. We'd already be in Syria. And I kind of looked at him and I said, I don't know if that's a great idea.
No.
As well as having Russia swoop in and say, hey, we'll hold those chemical weapons. That's not a real good idea either.
And, of course, there's an argument to be made that, well, maybe this is one of those instances where we actually didn't sell them the chemical weapons, Russia did.
Yes, that's another thought. Even though the dim ones out there want to say, hey, look, there were chemical weapons in Iraq, and they were probing the border of Syria. That's their big vote right there. Bush was right. He couldn't have been wrong. They're still pushing that.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. And just about, well, broke my steering wheel at the moment.
Well, I just about broke my steering wheel when you played that Ann Coulter quote, even though, or read it out loud, even though I'm ready for her to say offensive things. That one's over the top. That was worse than the three jackasses yesterday you played so eloquently. Those three just coming out and, again, condoning the Muslim Brotherhood for everything that's gone on, that's great, too. That's just wonderful.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm surprised I'm surprised someone didn't pull off a couple pairs of shoes and throw them at them.
See, that's the thing. I got the idea that that was entirely a phony baloney setup. There was no press corps there.
Was it an audio clip that you played of him or an actual video clip?
No, it was video. I mean, like I said, Michelle was wearing her eyeliner, Cleopatra style, you know, with the black line drawn all the way back, all the way out to her earlobe.
Now, you saying all this, I feel, is there not a slight odd chance that maybe this is something that was pre-taped, didn't even air from there, just something they threw together and...
No, they really went.
Well, it's even worse. I was hoping it was...
And they sat down with General Al Sisi. And it turns out he's just like George Washington.
Yeah.
Except that George Washington never led a coup to unseat a democratically elected president.
Right, and also George Washington was white. Yeah. And from Europe, but from Britain, but he was born here. So yeah, that's kind of a weird thing to say.
Yeah. But you knew they were really in Egypt because Michelle was talking. I'm sorry, wrong accent. Because Michelle was talking very slowly.
She's probably used to doing that with her own consistent or her own people, though. Honestly.
No. I mean, I remember when she delivered the teabagger response to a State of the Union or something, and she wasn't talking that slowly. She only talks that slowly, you know, Jeremy, when she thinks that she's talking, because not speaking in one L. Michelle's world, not speaking English is some sort of sign of diminished IQ capacity.
Right, and whenever I hear someone do that, I'm always brought back to Rush Hour. Do you ever see that movie with Chris Rock or Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan?
Oh, yeah.
And the part about, do you understand the words coming out of my mouth? And he did it with, like, the big, he exaggerated and everything, and he goes, yes. Just like that. The same idea, probably, I guess.
Very much so, yeah.
So that's all interesting to hear all that stuff from them. But, and Coulter thing, there's no excuse for that, and we should have some way to condone that. I mean, or not condone it, but...
Suppress it?
Punish her for that. Depress it, yeah, something like that, yeah.
Well, I think you touched the real heart of it, Jeremy. If in the course of that diatribe she had uttered the F word, the S word, or any of about five or six other words, everybody who broadcast that would have been on the hook for about a $475,000 fine. This country has an absolutely twisted conceptualization of what constitutes obscenity.
Right, and I'm sure that most of the Horn listeners are fans of Saint Carlin and his many, many times in the world of the seven
dirty words, right.
The seven dirty words, yeah. Or the what you can't bring on an airplane, but they'll give you a fork at the end if you wait long.
Right, and see, remember that... those seven dirty words wound up in the Supreme Court. I don't know if you know that or not, but they did, in the form of a case brought against Pacifica Radio. Pacifica was hailed into court and fined because somebody broadcast Carlin's actual clip in which he said the magic words.
Right.
And they were charged and fined by the FCC, and they took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, nope, still can't say them. And, of course, then years later, in the evolution of this whole process, you had Janet Jackson and the breasts of cultural demise. You remember the wardrobe malfunction?
That one was always kind of made me laugh, because we're born into this world generally seeing something like that for a good year of our first of our life or more. So whatever. I mean, I don't understand.
But it, you know, it was, and the wardrobe malfunction is what then engendered a massive right-wing hissy fit that wound up with the fines. For instance, the fine paid by Pacifica was elevated to, really, I think it's $475,000 to the person who says it, the person who broadcasts it, and every affiliate who broadcasts it.
Sounds more like a money-making scheme to me.
I'm sorry?
Sounds like a money-making scheme to me that they...
Well, it does a little bit, doesn't it? It's the free speech equivalent of a speed trap.
Right.
I mean, I know enough that when I'm on terrestrial radio, I don't say magic words. Right. But it is a little bit liberating to be out here on the interweb tubes, and if one of you guys calls in and lets fly an F-bomb, we all know that we're grown up enough to deal with it when it happens. Most folks are good enough with them to actually make it, well, to work with them like art. Some are better at it than others, but yeah.
Right, and I mean, I think that's a big part of why the Malloy campaign has succeeded so outstandingly. I think a lot of us have probably seen Malloy in video clips other than on censored radio and know that he's a little more poetic with his words, shall we say, when he's fired up. And I think a lot of us kind of want to see that side of him rather than having this tamed down, you know, oh my God, there's kids listening type thing.
Right. I mean, yeah, you mentioning the Malloy Kickstarter campaign. Wow, that's just it's just amazing. They've raised $48,243 on that Kickstarter campaign, and they've got a half a month yet to go. That's huge.
I'm blown away. It shows that he's definitely got support out there, no matter what people, all the bad things people say about Malloy all the time about how he's over the top. No, he's telling the truth, which people don't want to hear.
Right.
It's probably more sickening than the fact that he uses some colorful language in my book. I mean, I use colorful language all the time, but I forget where I saw the quote sometime. I saw it on social media somewhere saying that someone said they trust someone that uses colorful language more than someone that doesn't because that person is probably speaking the truth.
Well, I don't think there's many people in this country who don't use the fun words.
Right.
And frankly... Yeah. I'm not going to go there. It's not even Wednesday yet. But I think you probably know where I was going.
Right, yeah, no, definitely. I'm trying to think here. I can't think of a whole lot of stuff. I was calling in about those three last night and how they were over the top with their Muslim Brotherhood preaching and how they're going to destroy the world and, you know, fear speech again. But I was just thinking, I was joking to my girlfriend this morning and said, you ready for tomorrow? Ready to watch primetime TV? And she didn't really clue in on it. I said, you know what tomorrow is, right? She said, yeah. I said, so it's the endless loop of people jumping, planes hitting, Muslims did this, Muslims did that. Oh, my God, starting up more war talk. That's what it is.
Yeah, and I don't know. What time is President Not Sure speaking tonight?
I caught an interview with him and Wolf last night. It was whatever. I mean, it's him in his normal kind of way where he plots his words very carefully. But even he said that Syria isn't really a direct threat to us. Their strike capabilities are very limited. Because Wolf asked, well, what happens if we don't attack them, blah, 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 and an attack on Israel from them? And he said they're very limited in what they can do.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm tired of the whole through-the-looking-glass kind of... Because there will, of course, be people out there saying, see, this is how brilliant he really, really is. He played 11-dimensional chess, and he didn't have to fire a single missile. And now the Syrians are backing down. I'm not so sure.
No, I just think the Syrians take a look at history and realize in the last 12 years, if you call BS on us, we come and stomp you because we can. Not because it's right, but because we can, and that puts the fear in some of these smaller nations who would do things even if they didn't necessarily do them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, all I have to do is take a look at Saddam and, hey, he tried to kill my daddy, or even though Afghanistan's not really working out too well for us and just seems to be hurting our troops more than anything else. See the guy who killed that village of people last year and just got given 99 years or 99 life sentences or whatever it was. I don't know. But I want to wish you a safe flight to Texas and back and enjoy your time down there.
I think I will. Like I said, I'm really excited to be going there. I wish there was going to be more time to see more stuff, but I got to get back home or there won't be a horn here.
Right.
And that's not to say that Agnes won't keep things going, but, you know, bills are bills.
If you get a chance to go see the Alamo while you're down, they're anywhere near it.
No, I'm nowhere near it.
I was going to say there's three of them.
What? There's three Alamos?
It's two or three, I kid you not. I saw it on the Smithsonian Channel not too long ago because they're talking about some of the myths from it and this and that. And they said what people often see is a movie set of the Alamo. Never was the Alamo. And then there's one like 20 or 30 miles from the real Alamo.
Well, I just know this much. If I ever did get near San Antonio, I would not get all done up in drag and go take a leak on the wall. Ozzy Osbourne proved that is not a good idea. All liquored up, in drag, yeah, and take a whiz on the wall. No. Apparently they get real tetchy about that down there.
I'm sure they do. But anyway, Bob, have a safe flight, and I'll hear you when you get back.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jeremy. You take care.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Jeremy calling from Vermont, and we'll keep it rolling. 304-658-3333 is the number if you want to jump into the conversation. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Grant from Portland.
Hey, Grant. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Hey, I sent you an email last night, but I don't know if you saw it yet. Of all the calls going into Congress about Syria, it's like a 499-1 against action. That's the response the public has been just trumpeting at Congress right now.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, I find that incredibly encouraging. Well, I've noticed also that the rhetoric from the executive branch has been, of the backpedal variety since that kind of feedback's been coming in.
And
that was kind of interesting.
The worst thing in the world, and this is a mindset that I can't really fully comprehend, Grant, but I guess somebody is telling the president that he would be hamstrung were he to go to the Congress and get a no vote, and that if he then went ahead and started lobbing cruise missiles at Syria anyway, that the motions to impeach would go flying like when you walk into a group of pigeons and just spread your arms out and just up, you know, hundreds of them.
Well, I think you'd have a very difficult time making the case of imminent threat when they're talking about, you know, negotiations with the UN to take control of the chemical weapons. See, it's very clever on their side what they're doing, but I'm glad it's happening because it's putting that hammer back easy on the gun instead of cocking it back ready to go, you know. So as a situation, I'm really happy with what's happening, you know, because we're easing. That's just one step now away from war that we know is going to happen. You know, I've been listening, you know, it's wired up like World War One. It's, you know, looking ugly. And so I'm happy that so many people have called in. The social media networks that I'm tuned into have been just Syria, Syria, Syria for, solid days. And I think that has had its effect. If you don't mind, I mean, I'd like to put a number out.
Sure.
If any of the listeners haven't called their Congress representative or senators, you can call 202-225-3121. Just ask for them by name. And if you oppose the war, let your voice be heard. I mean, let's tip that ratio to 1,000-1. Make it absolutely positively clear you know, that we are war weary and we are not having this adventurism. You know, Israel and Saudi Arabia can quite frankly kiss my ass. They care nothing for this country. They just want us to do their bidding. I mean, what were you saying the other day? They're whipping out their paycheck. You know, they're
yeah. They've all, the Saudis and the Gulf states have said,
sign up.
Yeah, we'll you know, you do our wet work and we'll pay for it. I mean, yeah. Jesus, doesn't that reduce the United States to some sort of groveling servile status?
Basically, a merc garrison. That's what it reduces us to. You got it. I mean, hey, ain't that respect? You know?
Yeah.
That's how little they think of us.
And then, of course, like I said last night, the article that every now and then I run across a quote, kind of like Ann Coulter, and basically, how much philosophical space is there between Ann Coulter saying, "Isn't this a good thing? Arabs killing Arabs? I mean, isn't this nice?" and the statement by former Israeli consul general in New York, Alon Pincus, when he said, "We want them to keep killing. We want them to keep bloodying each other. We want them to hemorrhage to death. The best outcome would be where no one wins." That was not a rhetorical question, Grant. How much difference is there between what Alon Pincus said and what Ann Coulter said? Because I don't think you could slip a playing card in the space between them.
Well, they're of the same spirit, I must say.
And if we were going to get all religious, but this isn't Prayer Meeting Wednesday, if we were going to go all religious, we would say that spirit is, in fact, demonic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's evil. That's just evil.
And, yeah, this is one of those moments when, I don't ascribe to the enemy of my enemy is my friend, because I think if you live by that code, you wind up with nothing but enemies.
Yeah.
But by the same token, look, if the right wingers don't want to lob missiles into Syria, and I, as whatever it is I am, liberal, progressive, decent human being, person of conscience, don't want to lob missiles into Syria, I'm glad for whoever doesn't want to lob missiles into Syria. And it's not because I'm some sort of an isolationist.
No, clearly you're not. I mean, just listening to the horn. I mean, it's been very informative, seeing how every little jot and tittle is wired up between what parties and whose interests are doing what, and the pipeline here and the pipeline there, and these two camps and these four camps and these other guys. And then you look at the whole thing and you go, man, this is just a meat grinder. Do not stick your head in there. It's real simple.
Yeah, it's like, well, there's an old gag out there. Did you hear about the butcher who backed into his grinder? He got a little behind in his work.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, I'll be here all week. But by the same token, isn't that at the core of the pork story? But Grant, you reminded me of something here. You know how we've talked about from time to time that The Onion slips from funny into so damned realistic it isn't anymore?
Nearly prophetic, yeah.
Headline at The Onion: John Kerry costs U.S. defense industry $400 billion. Dateline Washington: responding to initial reports that Syria may relinquish its stockpile of chemical weapons following Secretary of State John Kerry's assertion that doing so would decrease the likelihood of American military strikes, representatives for the domestic defense industry complained to reporters Tuesday that the top-ranking diplomat may have cost them $400 billion in revenue. "We were ready to produce and sell Tomahawk missiles, advanced combat systems, and more unmanned Predator drones, but instead our Secretary of State had to run his big fat mouth about options for averting war, and now we're out hundreds of billions of dollars," said a visibly upset Lockheed Martin CEO Marilyn A. Hewson, who, along with her fellow executives at Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, and General Dynamics, complained that because the initial invasion would have more than likely led to a protracted, wide-ranging international conflict, Kerry might have even cost them trillions. With thousands of new munitions and logistical support contracts, Syria would have been a gold mine for us. I swear to God, if this doesn't work out, John Kerry owes us $500 billion. Hewson added that it was some consolation that, with Kerry as the country's chief foreign affairs liaison, he would, quote, probably say something idiotic in the near future that would lead to another lucrative international conflict.
Nailed it.
I mean, we... Yes. Let's be clear. The use of chemical weapons is evil and odious.
Yeah.
It's vicious. But the place where I run into trouble, Grant, is this notion that somehow conventionally using machine guns to chop toddlers into chutney isn't as bad. That's problem one. Problem two, oh, and by the way, where'd they get the munitions that they're... Oh, yeah, the Russians sold them to them. Great folks. Just ask them. They'll tell you. Love those pictures of those really, really butch pictures of Putin riding around without his shirt on. But then again, at least it doesn't look like he's been under a tanning bed. And so far, nobody's arrested him for doing gay propaganda, but, you know, who the hell am I? Okay, so that's all evil. All that's, you know, the conventional killing, the gas killings, right. And it's equally evil for Alon Pincus to say, we'd like to see them hemorrhage some more. That's evil, too. But can we just back, and this is the second example. We're learning more and more via the revelations of Edward Snowden about what the, and all the news stories continue to say, the NSA this and the NSA that. When Edward Snowden never worked for the NSA, he never drew a U.S. government paycheck. His paycheck was signed by some functionary inside Booz Allen Hamilton every damn time he drew it.
Mm-hmm.
But we talk about the NSA this and the NSA that, when in fact it's the defense contractors. There's something in me that just wants to say very, very plainly, Grant, that the greatest threat to peace in the world are America's defense contractors.
I concur. Yeah, I agree. They drive policy.
And, I mean, but let's be equal opportunity here. The other great threat to peace in the world are, say, Russia's defense contractors.
Right.
Because the Soviet Union is gone, and the great overarching state isn't doing all the manufacturing anymore for the sake of the glorious revolution of 1917. This is capitalism run amok. And I guess I'm looking for some sort of meta way to examine this whole process, and damned if it doesn't keep coming down to the fact that capitalism. I mean, that thing from The Onion is all too realistic, because you know that there's some executive at Raytheon who heard the news this morning and said, God damn it!
He wants to send him an invoice.
Just ruined the Raytheon executive's day. I mean, you can just see him just slamming his coffee cup down and, F me running! Peace!
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's not really going to be peace. But and by the way, can I ask a question here, Grant?
Sure.
We know now that either somebody at Booz Allen Hamilton or one of the other defense contractors, or maybe on about 1,000-to-1 odds, somebody at, say, the NSA,
mm-hmm.
has access to our credit card numbers. And can, I don't know, rent a room at the Notel Motel and watch dirty movies on our credit cards all they want now, because they've hacked it. Or they can go in and find out that that Mr. and Mrs. Jones aren't getting along that well in the bedroom, and it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They know this stuff because the contractors for the NSA, like Booz Allen Hamilton, worked day and night diligently to crack all of this encryption.
Right.
You know what I'd love to know, Grant?
What's that?
Why did the NSA not know in advance that whoever did it was going to lob some chemical weapons at some children? We're spying on the whole damned world, right down to trying to get old Aunt Sophie's peanut butter fudge recipe. But the geniuses over at the NSA and the super geniuses over at Acme, I mean Booz Allen Hamilton, didn't happen to notice a bunch of traffic going back and forth saying, "Now we will lob the chemical weapons at the children."
That's looking into the mud puddle. It's a little murky in that world. That's the thing. But from what I have seen, I mean, there was the group that I think did it. There was a lot of talk amongst them that they're just going to fight no matter what and to the bitter end and, you know, all the chest talk and this kind of stuff out of one of the rebel groups that I guess we're backing. And, you know, my personal theory is that one of those guys did it.
Well, I think they've both done it to each other.
I think they were losing. I think they got their hands on it, and I think they used it in order to draw in the super ballots. That's my personal theory. But what I would like to know is who supplied it, who financed it, and who ordered the strike. That's what I want to know. This is where
you cannot get the answers to any of those questions through the use of cruise missiles. We have not yet developed an interrogating cruise missile.
That's right. In fact, if anything, you're going to bury the evidence. But maybe that was the point.
Now, let me throw one more thing out there for consideration. It is pretty clear at this point that a lot of the so-called SIGINT, you know, the signals intelligence, the business of overhearing, listening in on radio traffic and so forth, came from the Israelis.
Well, of course. An invested player.
What do we say if it turns out, as I think appears likely, that the Israelis knew it was going to happen before it happened and didn't say anything? And the little children died, frothing at the mouth and gasping for breath.
It wouldn't surprise me. Nothing surprises me over there because...
Well, I mean, Alon Pincus already said we want them to hemorrhage to death, and we have videos of little children internally hemorrhaging to death.
It wouldn't surprise me, Bob. Nothing over there would surprise me. I mean, there's no Boy Scouts left over there. Period. Nothing would surprise me. You know,
no.
You've got... Bandar
Bush.
Bandar Bush. He's doing his magic. I'm sure he had something to do with it, but I can't prove it. You know, it's just this cauldron of backstabbers and duplicitousness and it's war.
I feel like I'm watching a Levantine road production of The Usual Suspects. And it's all, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or Levantine production of L.A. Confidential, and it's all Rollo Tomasi. And Rollo Tomasi is Israel, and Rollo Tomasi is Bandar Bush, and Rollo Tomasi is the Emir of Dubai, or the UAE, or...
Yeah.
And nothing, you know, we've had 2.5 decades, or nearly 2.5 decades, Grant, to learn that nothing good happens when we go stomping around in the Middle East with our high explosives.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say about a country that has 2.5 decades to learn that and can't learn? I mean, is this the point at which we just say that that the United States foreign policy travels on a short bus?
Well, there's a couple things there. I think there's a huge swath of the population that learned a long time ago. The problem is they don't have any power to the people, you know, they've, I mean, look at this thing they've built. You know, unitary executive, military industrial complex, they are well ensconced in there. And this is one of the biggest gripes I have about this empire. There's no way to reform it. It is so...
No, you can't reform empire. I mean, it's just a rule.
It is so expertly insulated from any sort of keeping them from doing the worst thing possible. And frankly, I just scratch my head when I'm trying to think, okay, well, put yourself in the spot of an analyst or a strategist and try to see it through their eyes. Stuff. I still can't come up with, why would you fucking do that? You're going to have blowback here, here, and here, and you do it anyways. The worst thing possible to do is the first thing you try, and you won't listen to anybody else. Anybody who tries to say anything, why don't we try this or that, or a diplomatic route, oh, you just don't know how the world works. Don't worry your pretty head about it. Just pay your taxes. You know?
And for God's sakes, don't worry about what it is your taxes are funding.
No shit. I mean, it's like, and it's a series of blowback operations. And then these are the supposed experts at what?
Well, it's like something that I posted early this morning, because I guess I just got up in a rotten mood. Bashar, give me the nasty chemicals. Good. Now here's your Russian-made machine gun. You can go back outside and play now.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen some pretty atrocious things come out of some of those rebel groups and some of the things they're up to. And one thing I think, one of the guys from the UK, Galloway, made a great little speech. I got a video in Parliament. You know, he's describing, you know, the people that they're backing, you know, chopping people up and eating their body parts in front of a camera as if somebody wants to see that.
Right.
You know, that's their leader's idea of bravado. I mean, this is the kind of scum we're backing. And this is the kind of thing that makes me really scratch my head. It's like, wow. Who selects these allies? You know, I'm getting a little tired of hearing, well, you have to work with what you got. Really?
Yeah, you go to war with the allies you have, not the allies you wish you had.
So now it's Al-Qaeda is our ally? I thought we were fighting them. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like I said, if you operate on the philosophy that the enemy of my enemy is my friend, you wind up with no friends and all enemies.
Yeah. I think, well, I'll just put it to you this way. I think we need some serious new blood in the strategic command. I'll put it to you that way.
Well, while we're there, let's...
These guys seem to be Johnny One Note.
Well, of course they are. I mean, the Pentagon is in the business of destroying stuff and blowing stuff up, and you don't rise through the ranks by being a brilliant strategic thinker. You rise through the ranks of the American military now because you have sufficiently brown-nosed your way forward.
And thus... the turds ride to the top. That's great.
Yep. We call them floaters around here. it's hard to, but you know, it's not, but understand, it's not just the Pentagon. We've got an ugly case of groupthink in the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the majority in the House. You know what? If we go forward on this notion that we're going to provide that we're going to give peace a chance, only it's not peace, it's slaughter. It's only peace for us because we're not participating in the slaughter. The little babies are still dying. The teenage militia fighters are still dying. The guys who were hoping to go home to their family in Bashar al-Assad's conscript army are still dying. Civilians are dying. It's only peace for us because we're not participating. Let's understand that. We're making no real overtures toward ending this because I have to come back to it, Grant. There are parties who do not want it to end. They want it to be a massive hemorrhage.
I hear you. I would like to put something out to the universe.
But I guess before you do... I guess if we are going to forestall votes in the Congress, you know, the Senate has already said that it's going to forestall its vote. Probably the most relieved man in the United States
is John Boehner. Because this might very well have been the final straw. This would have been the proof that not only can he not manage his own caucus, that he is effectively not even Speaker of the House.
Wow.
Because, it wouldn't have just been a bunch of isolationist teabagger Republicans voting, oh, hell no. It would have also been a significant portion of the Democratic caucus voting, oh, hell no. And for the for the American people to see that, that would have been intolerable.
Sure.
And always remember that John Boehner can't even enjoy his Merlot anymore because he knows that Eric Cantor is standing right behind him with his fangs sharpened, and as Shakespeare said, Cassius has a lean and hungry look.
Yes, he does have a lean and hungry look, doesn't he?
And he is definitely Cassius to Boehner's Brutus.
Yeah, you just can't wait to slip the dagger in.
But you said you wanted to throw something out there to the universe.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. You know, if you're going to have some kind of peace conference for Syria, I want somebody like Iceland to adjudicate it or conduct it or host it or decide what's fair and unfair in the proceedings between the warring parties. Because they have absolutely not one dog in the fight. They are not a superpower. They are not a regional player. And as far as I've ever known, they're pretty darn level-headed. So that's who I nominate, Iceland, to be the broker of peace.
I would like that, too. But again, let's understand, we ain't having no peace conference. We're having a don't-use-chemical-weapons party.
Yeah.
Oh, and I tell you what, I'm really, really happy. I just had a note in from Andy. I may have been punked. I found the thing about Ann Coulter's quotes on I get these emails all day long from an outfit called Americans Against the Tea Party.
Oh.
And that's where this came from. And usually the stories play out. I mean, for instance, I've got one here, and it's very much a real story. Child bride dies in Yemen as a result of sex with her husband. The child bride was 8 years old. The husband was 40. But it turns out Andy went and dug around, and it looks like Americans Against the Tea Party may have gotten snookered, and by extension, so did I. It apparently comes from the Daily Current, which is even more believable than The Onion.
Okay. Got it.
So I am happy to have been smoked on this one.
Yeah.
Although look, who would not have believed that she said it? And that's why I got snookered.
That's the thing.
Because she's just that nasty.
Yeah. That's the thing. When the lie is so close to the truth, it makes it pretty dicey. It happens. We live in a sea of propaganda, so it's going to happen. No big deal. But, I wanted to put something out to the Horn listeners also. I know at one time, I think they had like 5,000 listeners to the Horn. And I wanted to say to anybody who is on PayPal that I use the monthly payment thing, and it works perfectly. And I wanted to encourage them to pick a day of the month where they've got $10. They know they got $10. Put it on the auto and let her fly. And just the payments will be made automatically. You don't even have to remember or forget it, anything. It happens. So if you're on PayPal, I'd say go for it. And I just put a zero in there for how many months and just let it ride. I mean, I want the Horn to be around.
Thank you.
I encourage others to do the same.
Thank you, Grant. I deeply appreciate that. In fact, Kevin just echoed some of your sentiments. Kevin took us down to needing only 60 more dollars.
Well, my goal...
He said, just donated via PayPal. Hope it helps. It does. Kevin says, no Horn, not on my watch.
Nice.
But yeah, we had problems with that subscription hickey, but now John went in and redid it all,
and it's working flawlessly so far. So, yeah, anybody that wants to, that would be great.
Yeah, and I think it's great what you're doing. I mean, if you could get, now, I would love to see, 5,000 listeners do that. You would have no troubles with equipment or finances, and certainly
right,
not a problem. But maybe we just have to build up to it. You know, it takes a while for people to get familiar with the button and how it hurts, and they use it, and then it just takes time. But I highly encourage everybody to do that if they can. If you got the money, do it.
Yep, indeed. And thank you for signing up for the subscription grant. It is deeply appreciated. And
yeah, no worries.
And
I love the horn,
Yeah, and I love the conversations that we have. And I think everybody else does as well. I get these notes from people saying, I could only send $10. I'm sorry it's not more. Don't ever apologize. That is huge. And I understand how huge it is. Anything out of, because everybody has stuff they have to do. And it's huge. And if, granted, if everybody who listens did do what you're suggesting, we'd never have a problem.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying it.
You're absolutely right. Well, Grant, thank you very much, and I wish you a very good evening, and hopefully we'll talk soon when I get back. And you reminded me of something. I probably need to repeat this. If it is at all humanly possible, we're going to stream the event from Papa Rollo's Pizza in Waco Thursday evening at about 7:30 Eastern Time, 4:30 your time, Pacific Time.
Okay, cool.
All right.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Bob. Take care.
You take care too, Grant. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Bye now. Mighty kind words on Grant's part. And never doubt for a moment that I don't... I know at all times, I know every time we hot up the mic here, why we're able to. And it has nothing to do with my driver determination and everything to do with yours. So if we can finish off Dr. John's challenge this evening, and we've got about an hour to do it, that's $60, we will be closer to being out of the woods than in them. That would leave us $400 to raise between Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And maybe that can happen. Maybe that can happen. I wanted to tell you a little story. I was really, really honored. I got to participate this morning in something that was happening with my friends out in the Bad River community. The Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe people. The Bad River Eco Defense Committee had a panel discussion, and it just moved me almost beyond expression that I got a call asking me to fire up the Skype line and participate in that panel out there. And I did. And my purpose in participating in that panel was to talk about the health impacts that one can expect from massive blasting-centered demolition that goes with mountaintop removal, or what they are euphemistically referring to out there as open-pit mining. See, what is planned for the Pinokies is the largest mountaintop removal operation in the world. A half a mile wide, 1,200 feet deep, and something like 22 miles long over the course of 35 years. Now, for the most part, here in Appalachia, we've only been experiencing mountaintop removal for about a decade and a half. And already we have cancer clusters. Already we have statistical excess deaths numbering around 4,000. Already, we have doubled the cancer rates. Already, we have shocking levels of almost every birth defect imaginable. What will the Bad River community, what will Ashland and Iron Counties in Wisconsin look like in 35 years? Of course, the promise is, the promise from a mining company. Oh, I crack me up sometimes. The promise from the mining company is that when they are done, they're going to clean up their mess, and they're going to turn their open cesspit into a giant lake where everybody can go femming, and they can just put on their little water wings and their little blow up dragon and piggy and everything life rings and just go a paddling around in the swill. So my purpose was to try to put a little reality into that situation. And I just wanted to take a moment to extend my thanks, if anyone is listening from up that way, to extend my thanks for being invited into that discussion, because it is one of the greatest privileges I've ever known. I've never been welcomed anywhere as openly or as warm-heartedly as I have been in northern Wisconsin. If you've never been there, you should make a trip. But there was another treat to it as well. After I spoke, a man named Joe Rose stood to speak. And he is of the Eagle Clan of Ojibwe people. And he spoke at length and just absolutely blew my mind. I recorded it. The audio is not the best. But will somebody please remind me when I get back home to edit that so that I can put it up so that you can hear it? Because Joe Rose, who is an elder of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe, explained the creation story as he and his people understand it. The origins of humanity. He went into depth on the prophecies of the seven fires. He explained what it means to be in the seventh fire prophecy even now as we speak. And I can't help but think that even had some human slug from GTAC been listening, and likely they were, they may, who knows, that they must have felt at least a little chill breath on the backs of their necks as Joe Rose explained what it means that this rotten hillbilly Chris Klein wants to do to those exquisite waters, that sweet air, those skies so blue that until you have seen them, you have not understood the idea of blue. And I got to hear it. And I got to be moved. And I got to be changed. And perhaps I like to think made, maybe, just maybe, a little more human in the process. Luda kicking in to help help us get out of the hole this evening. Thank you very much. Thank you. A note. All I can afford, but I want to help you get out of the hole. Oh, and Seminole means runaway in Muskogee. Because that's one of the interesting, that's one of the more fascinating aspects of the early occupation, colonization, my ass, the early occupation of this continent by white Europeans and the people that they stole away from their own homes to help them occupy it. It is not well taught, so much of history isn't. But the fact of the matter is, as soon as there were many, many people who, as soon as they came into contact with the peoples who lived here, realized that compared to their white European lifeways, the people who lived here already were miles out in front of them. Every now and then you'll run across one of those stories, whether it relates to people, white folks running away to the Muskogee, or white folks running away to the Shawnee, or the Haudenosaunee. A lot, and many of them would be slaves, white or African, who realized there was a much better life to be had among the first peoples. And so, yeah, Luda it touches on it. Seminole means runaway in Muskogee because people ran away to them. There are pictures from the last century of various Muskogee peoples, and they are every color under the rainbow. Joe Rose touched today upon the fact that the four sacred colors among the Anishinaabe are red, black, white, and yellow. And he said it just so happens that touches upon the essential colors of all of the humans on the planet. And so in these photographs that I saw when I was, because any time I'm exposed to information like this, I have to know more. It's how I'm wired. 19th century photographs of Muskogee people are every variation on every color that a human being can be, because so many ran away not from civilization, but to civilization. You want to read a fascinating story? Dig around and find the story of George Colbert, not Colbert. George Colbert, Colbert, in what would become Northwest Alabama and Northeast Mississippi, and how fervently he was one of those, and I don't know if he was Muskogee or not, but he was one of those who had been the product of intermarriage between First Peoples and Europeans. And the speech he made trying to keep lands for people who had been living on them and living with them and belonged to the land for thousands and thousands of years. It's funny that so many of these speeches that are attributed to great native leaders are far more reflective of ideas of freedom than anything that white folks were up to at the time. It's just fascinating. Artists writing in, female runaways, many Caucasian women were captured and decided to stay with various Indian tribes. It was shared by the Indians that the clothing of white women, such as corsets, were quite oppressive. I believe Susan B. Anthony had an Indian name as she was a member of a tribe. In my reading today, I was given to understand that, among other things, the individual leaders of a given group had to give way to the will of the grandmothers, because the societies were matrilineal. Which kind of makes sense if you really are tied to the planet and you have any sort of reverence for life. You begin to get a picture of what an upside-down system it must have looked like for people to see these patrilineal white folks marching in. It must have just seemed crazy. But the long and the short of it, I suppose, yeah, like I said, I was deeply honored, and I am transformed every time I get to participate in this effort. So my thanks to the Eco Defense Committee of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe. Oh, a note coming in from Kate a little bit earlier. Valid questions is the subject line. And it relates to what I was reading about Ann Coulter earlier. And even though it turns out that was me getting punked, thank you, Daily Current. Thanks, or as Daffy Duck would say, thanks for the sour persimmons, brother. Thanks, there it is. Thanks for the sour persimmons, brother. Kate writes, regarding redeeming values of hate speech. Sad to say, I know a lot of people who would agree with her. She's hard to ignore when the folks who drink their morning coffee in McDonald's every morning watching Fox with a 1,000-yard stare. They don't even flinch when they hear that kind of speech. And then with a reminder, too bad you didn't play that Tea Party clip yesterday. Lots of folks do not understand those who lurk among us. Those seemingly normal folks scare me more than tainted pork. By the way, I buy my pork and chicken from local growers. And that's about your only hope. Get to know the guy or woman who is growing your local meat and see if you can't buy it from them. If they'll put it on their tables and they don't die, odds are you won't either. But no, Kate reminds me of this, and we do have a little time right now. It's about 18 minutes past the hour. Christopher Cambron is the person in question. It is something that he posted himself to YouTube. Before I commit fully to this, I want to make sure it isn't gone. No, hell no. No, if there's a video of a lactating woman feeding her baby on YouTube, that shit's gotta go. Dirty, dirty, dirty. But Christopher Cambron, we have always with us. He's the administrator of the American Patriotism YouTube page. And he's very, very angry. Well, surprise, 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 Sergeant Carter. But anyway, before we go there, a little story out of the Old Dominion, Virginia. Marshall Terrace is a neighborhood in Danville, Virginia. The Register and Bee, the local newspaper there, reports that racist and anti-gay flyers
were distributed last week throughout that neighborhood. They were allegedly distributed by the local chapter of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. The same text that appeared on the flyers is to be found at the website of the Loyal White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, self-described as, quote, a law-abiding Christian organization, and who am I to argue with that, that fights for, quote, white people's rights, because, you know, white folks ain't got none of those, except for all of them. It's the usual laundry list of putrid filth that the Klan does. Police there in Danville say that more than 500 flyers were distributed. Oddly enough, there's a city ordinance against doing that, and the police chief says if they can just figure out who done it, well, they'll sure charge him. Don't hold your breath. Bless her heart, an 86-year-old lady told the Register and B that when she found it, she said, I resent it. It just aggravated me. I picked it up and put it in the trash where it belonged. Tell it, Granny. And I mean that respectfully. Got a lot of regard for grandmothers. I'm married to one. So with that as a sort of background, yeah, here he is, a grieved white guy, Christopher Cambron, administrator of the American Patriotism YouTube page, who thinks of himself as a patriot in the same vein as, say, the folks who mustered out at Lexington, or answered the call to Lexington and Concord. This guy is a more potty-mouthed version, say, of the Westboro Baptist Church. I warn you, I'm warning you now. One, get little Timmy and little Cindy and little Johnny and little Susie out of the room. Two, this is filthy stuff. It doesn't get any nastier. And as a caveat, I am not running this for its more prurient aspects. I'm running this because, as Kate said in her note, I wonder, what did she say exactly? Let's not be paraphrasing when I got the text right in front of me. Lots of folks do not understand those who lurk among us. One of those lurkers sitting before a hanging American flag and a black flag with a skull with a pair of crossed swords clenched in its teeth, patriot Christopher Cambron.
Okay, hi. The White House had Christopher Paul Cambron and me taken off the air because I was saying hate speech. I didn't say any hate speech. I said there was only one race. The human race. It's what the colleges teach. There's only one race. People think black and white and Asian are all different races. That's racist. There's only one race. They're all part of one race, the human race. But as they took me off the air because the White House told them to, they've got all these videos.
Now, wait a minute. The White House took him off the air. Proof? Anything? Nah, none of that. Just the paranoid little bees buzzing around inside Christopher Cambron's noggin. But anyway, do tell, Christopher.
Those street fight niggas. This is YouTube. I mean, this isn't me. I didn't put these out. Two niggas fighting. Bitch-ass niggas fight. Thug-ass, tough-ass hood nigga. You know, street black versus black. It goes on and on. And I watch these videos, and the video goes where the black guy's punching the other black guy, saying, nigga, saying, they're calling each other niggers, and they're beating each other up, calling each other niggers, you bitch nigger, and they call each other up. Now, it seems that they don't like a white person saying the word nigger. They think, oh, that's racist because you're white. Well, no, what's racist is if you believe a person because of the color of skin can't say a word, other people are making millions of dollars, right? The rapper, the black nigger artists are making millions of dollars saying nigger. Right? There's other people. Al Sharpton.
See what happens, before he goes on about Al Sharpton for a minute, see what happens when Rush Limbaugh does it? The little 976,332,512 tier dumbass punk Klansmen think, oh, okay. Because he's aggrieved. It's racism for him. See? It's racism. He's the one suffering racism. The world is just one big lunch counter that he can't walk up to and holler that word till he's content. Meanwhile, Dateline, Nashville, Tennessee, the story of Tony Jenkins, a server at Red Lobster, who served a white couple in their 20s who had decided to go and do some fine dining. Well, it was a toss-up between Waffle House and Red Lobster, and I guess Red Lobster won. She served a white couple in their 20s, gave them good service, or as good as she could. Toni Jenkins is, of course, a woman of color. She's 19 years old. She's going to school to be a nurse. The goddess of irony is watching this case closely. She serves them. And the 20-something white couple was rude. Still, she did her job professionally. Hi, I'm Tony. I'll be your server tonight. And they just ignored her. And they had sat down to eat. They had not gone to the carryout area. No, called ahead for carryout. No. No, they sat down to eat their dinner. And when she asked them for their orders, they gave them their order and said, just put everything in a box. She said, would y'all like dessert? No, just bring the check. So she brought him the check. And you know what a check looks like. It's printed out in a computer-generated thermal paper. Red Lobster number 0620. The tab was $44.53. And where it says tip, they wrote none. And where it says total, they wrote nigger, signed the check, got their food, and left. She photographed the check. She put it online. With the comment, this is what I got as a tip last night. So happy to live in the proud southern states. God bless America, land of the free and home of the low-class racists of Tennessee. She was suspended from her job for doing that. She was subjected to hate. And even though her manager said she did not deserve it, the fact that she put it up online, well, that was embarrassing to corporate. And so, she was suspended. That's Nashville. That's in Nashville. I have no idea where Christopher Cambron is, but he was going to say something about one of the favorites of his type, Al Sharpton.
People are saying nigger, right? There's other people, Al Sharpton, going on making millions of dollars on television on the word nigger. So plenty of black people are making millions of dollars on the word nigger. But when a white person says nigger, off the air. Ban them from the air. That's racism. That's like telling a black nigger to go to the back of the bus. Telling a white person, well, you can't say certain words. That is racism. That's racist behavior. Excuse me.
Oh, Jesus, come on. You can't even edit out the belches?
We're not even going to go through and play it. Because all you're going to hear them say is call each other nigger. And this is shocking. They took one of my videos off, and I was showing videos of police stations getting blown up. And I was saying, good job, right? Great patriots blowing up these scumbags, right? They thought that was shocking. Not niggers fighting each other and beating each other to death. Punching each other. I don't think that's shocking. And I didn't make the video. I was just showing like on YouTube. Well, let's look at the other one. Here's a protest, and all these black people are saying they don't like a white person. They're being very racist against a white person. But that's okay, because if we looked at the fine line of when they suspended me, they said a protected people. Because white people aren't protected. That's why I thank the God for the Aryan Nation. Going out and blowing these prosecutors and lawyers away and correction officers, blow them away. Because the Aryan Nation are the only law enforcement left in America. They're all the rest are crazy fucking vandal and criminals. The Aryan Nation is the only ones that support Americans. They're the last bit of justice in America is the Aryan Nation. That the only white people are a couple of dizzy old broads that have their asses fucked to hell by these niggers. And they're like, oh, you're calling a white person a bigot. You know, that's just unbelievable.
Yeah, because it's not unbelievable. A couple of nasty old broads.
This guy's covering all the bases, isn't he?
Tonight's toaster goes to Sandra. As well as our understatement award for the evening. I certainly don't like this white person I'm listening to right now. That's for damn sure.
Neither do I.
I ain't even claiming him. I'm paler than he is. I ain't claiming him. Mercifully, we're about half done. But at this point in time, I'm pretty sure that it's not going to... No.
Unbelievable. Oh, this is about Ted Nugent. They didn't like Ted Nugent saying it like it was. If you're white, you can't say what you feel.
Yeah, what they didn't like Ted Nugent saying was that Trayvon Martin got what was coming to him. Remember? Sure. And Christopher Cambron apparently doesn't like... I mean... Now, you heard the chanting. Please go home. Please go home. Please go home. Please go home. On the other hand, you've heard Christopher Cambron. Can we put his speech on and those chants on a sort of continuum of valued free speech in this country? I think we can. I'm pretty sure this is not the Daily Current at this point. I'm not getting punked again. This guy's real, and so are the millions and millions and millions and millions of other people just like him. Or, as Kate refers to them, the folks who lurk among us.
You're a bigot. You see, you're saying the same things black people were saying on Fox News, the same thing black people were saying on MSNBC. You're saying the exact same things of the opposition. But because he's white, he's a bigot. If you're black, well, you're...
That may be the only true statement this guy has thus far made. Because he's white, he's a bigot. Because that is an essential element of the bigotry. Teach your children well.
Allowed to make your own opinion. You see how it's a racism world? And the thing is, the white Americans are not going to play down and play pussyfoot like the blacks did for so long. I'm the one who said it years ago. The whites will go on a shooting spree and teach you who the bigot is. They'll put a gun up your ass and blow you away. So people like YouTube, keep banning white people. Don't let them get there, right? Keep banning them, YouTube. Don't let them get their voices out. Don't let them, right? They're part of it. They want white people to go on shooting sprees. That's right, YouTube. Stop allowing white people to get out their frustration, to let the steam out on the air and share their beliefs.
Because that's all they're doing. It's just venting a little steam, and it's healthy. And if we don't, then the white people are going to come and blow some more people away. Got it? Makes perfect sense. In this guy's, in the thin gray settlings between his ears that pass for this Yahoo's brains. Jason, with a tweet a moment or so ago. I didn't know someone could say that word in so many different ways. Sad for my race sometimes. Yeah. But see, the thing is, that there's the artificial construct. This guy is not your race, Jason. This guy is not any race. Race is an artificial construct invented, as we've noted, by white Europeans to suit their needs, depending on who they wanted to define as the other. Jews have been non-white. Arabs non-white. Italians non-white. Irish non-white. Aboriginal natives of any given continent or subsection thereof not white. As not white is a definition that is used to lump people together that you just really wish weren't on the planet, or you know, they wished weren't on the planet, or Christopher Cambron wishes weren't on the planet. Yeah, there's one human race. But it's a little bit like the Sneetches by Dr. Seuss. There are star-bellied Sneetches, and there are Sneetches with no stars upon theirs. And what he objects to is what Dr. Seuss was talking about when the Sneetches with no star bellies went and got stars on their bellies from the star-belly machine, and then the star-bellied Sneetches had to go and get the stars taken off their bellies, and well, then you know you just wind up with a lot of star mixing. Mistargination, right?
That's right, YouTube. Keep banning white people and making sure white people don't get to speak. Isn't that strange how YouTube is joining on the government, this corrupt tyrant government? So when people start getting hung, make sure you understand you people...
Hang, you horse's ass, but never mind.
People on YouTube, every employee of YouTube will be hung until dead. You're going to get into this thing and make sure people can't talk. When you're hung by your neck, you won't be able to talk either, will you? Because you ban a person today, they will hang you tomorrow.
Since this guy's already got the persecution fantasy going for him, can we get him a little visit? I'm sure he gets up every day and wonders if this is the morning when he gets marched off to the Obama-Kenyan Muslim re-education FEMA camp. You caught all that, right? The Aryan Nation, the murderers of the Aryan Nation are the only law enforcement left in this country? How about that? I guess he missed the story about the 107-year-old man in Arkansas
who was blown away by the cops because they just didn't have time for him to run out of bullets. Flashbang grenade. God knows how many rounds. My God, you make it 107 years on this planet, and the cops take you down. Because they busted in your door with a no-knock warrant. But right, this guy's going to start hanging YouTube executives because they took down his nasty little video. Oh, now he's giving, I guess his burps are contagious.
I'm a probability analysis, and the people of YouTube, the workers and owners, that son of a Russian who came running here because his parents don't have free speech in Russia, came here to squash our free speech here in America, I believe your whole family will be hung until dead. They will beat you while you're hanging like piñatas. I'm a probability analysis. I'm offering you that.
I'm a probability analysis? I'm a thinking you're a drunk. I'm a thinking you're a huffing gas. But so now he wants to hang Sergey Brin's family? This guy has anger issues.
You keep banning Americans from speaking their mind, from letting out steam. You people will beat until you're dead. Every owner of YouTube will be beaten until they're dead. Mark my words here today, what I'm stating today, you will be executed for banning Americans who just want to get out some steam and speak freely. You're definitely the bigots. YouTube owners are going to get what's coming to them. They're going to be taken out, hung, and beat pinatas. Things the sticks beat with the sticks, and the candy comes out.
Yeah, because he's not a racist. Man! It took him 6 minutes and 55 seconds to work in a Latino slur. Or did I miss an earlier one? Jesus. Thorazine dart in the neck? It helps. Just... And we're going to beat him till the nighty-night.
But the only thing that's going to come out of you and your children is blood. Your bigot blood for trying to fucking squash Americans for wanting to speak out against us. But they're always showing one side. Hey, it's wrong for me to say we're all one race, but it's okay to have show after show of blacks beating up white people. You're going to meet your maker. I just want you to know, every owner of YouTube is going to get bashed in the head until you're fucking dead. Mark my words.
Or not. Or not. A lot of email. Fritz in Arkansas, getting right to the heart of the matter. The subject line, proof that Keystone Light kills brain cells. That Aryan YouTuber was sounding like he's about run out of his 30-pack of Keystone Light. from Jeremy. Hey, Bob, why can't we volunteer creeps like this to the one-way trip to Mars? This creep makes my skin crawl. He's a KKK member or just loves to scream reverse racism 10 different ways while saying N, this and that. Mars needs Republicans. Well, actually, this guy's not... Well, yeah, he is. But what he is, this guy's a fairly prominent teabagger. He's a Tea Party patriot. Nice, huh? Sitting down in his basement. You know what? The thing is, okay, those videos he's complaining about probably do exist. But you know what? As the great jurist and, I think, learned hand once wrote, the remedy to bad speech is more speech. Now, learned hand had never heard this guy. But if that crap's out there, then why not just acknowledge it for crap instead of seeing in it some sort of booger eater's wet dream of reverse racism? Fritz also noting goobers on the YouTubes. Seems Bubba never heard of Windows Movie Maker. Damn, the least he could have done was edited the belch. But then again, you got Rush Limbaugh out there stammering and stuttering and making all kinds of... He's just following broadcast standards for a right-winger. There's Randy in PA. Oh no, now you've probably run afoul of some unknown type of gag rule. I think we've just been on a sort of little gag rule hunting expedition this evening, haven't we? And remember 1929, says Jim. A note, another street speaker spoke in different tones, was mocked, laughed at in 1929. Guess what he did? Yeah, because a whole lot of people went along with him. And then there were the moneyed class who said, oh no, people will be able to control this man. From Robert in Australia, Janet Jackson's breasts. Destroyer of worlds. The day Janet Jackson had her wardrobe malfunction, it was repeated over and over on Australian television on the half hour during every news break. Only one channel used censored footage. I must have seen Miss Jackson's breast about 23 times that day. And unlike America, the story wasn't about Miss Jackson's breast. It was the reaction of American TV viewers to seeing Miss Jackson's breast. For the most part, no one up here could understand what all the fuss was about. For a couple of years, I was lucky enough to live near a popular Sydney Harbour beach called Balmoral. Have a look-see on Google Earth. It's considered a family beach. Mums and dads take their kids, as there's lots of sand and little to no surf, and for as long as I can remember, it's been topless, for both sexes. And it's all perfectly acceptable on the beach. If you venture up onto the boardwalk, it's custom to put on a top, and everyone does. So Miss Jackson showing one breast on the telly, what's the big deal? P.S., signed Robert from Oz. P.S., election news. Online protests started on Sunday morning over the Liberal Party's plan to limit the Labor Party's national broadband network to 25 Mbps. I shall be following that closely. Do please and keep us apprised, Robert. With regard to pre-speech pageantry, Jack in Shreveport notes, well, MSNBC's got their whoop-de-doo going before the president's speech, and apparently it's going to be a dandy. I just saw an alert flash across from Chicken Noodle News saying that President Obama will explain to us how Syria affects our vital national security interests. I think I'm going to watch it with a rubber chicken. Actually, I'll probably watch it while listening to Malloy. Maybe he'll do commentary. That'd be nice. We are ever so near to finishing off Dr. John's gainful employment challenge for this evening, and it is badly needed. $50 away. Five at 10, two at 25, one at 50. We are ever so close. And this will be the last time I'll be able to ask or request or suggest before I go on the road. So if we could, please, it would be wonderful. And, like, not kidding, you know, well, we know what the stakes are. 11 minutes before the hour, and we go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Bob.
Hey, Kevin, what's happening?
Well, I had to call in, and you had this human on.
Oh, and you're using the term loosely, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like you said, Mars needs, well, Mars needs teabaggers in this case, because this guy doesn't even qualify for Republican. He's on the far out fringe of the right of the teabaggers with that stuff, because
But if he's in a pinch, Kevin, you know he'll vote Republican.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because them Democrats are socialist Indians who believe in the mixing of the races.
Yep, I do. So, you know, it just amazes me. You know, I was thinking last night, Republicans would have voted for anybody over Obama. And I do mean anybody. You could have put...
They voted to put Godzilla from Wasilla a heartbeat away from the presidency.
Exactly. That's what I mean. But if she'd have been first on the ticket, they would have voted for her. And it just... Watching these people today scares me because of the way that they're so running around with their heads cut off and acting like the world's ended because a black man has become president. And it just, you know, it's like this guy mentioned Al Sharpton. Well, you know, I may not like Al Sharpton that much, but every time I hear something like that, I like him a little bit more. You know, and it's just gotten to the point with these people that, you know, I've got, personally, got to take that stand and say, well, okay, I'll take Al Sharpton over you any day, pal, and with no qualms about it. I'll take Barack Obama over you any day. And the other thought I had was I'm so glad, in a way, that I'm not sighted, because I don't have the ability anymore to tell whether a person's black, white, brown, whatever, unless they tell me or unless their accent's of such that I can kind of guess that it's another race. But, you know, we do this on Twitter every day. You have no idea who you're tweeting with. You don't know what that person is or isn't. And nobody thinks twice about it. And, you know, so the idea of looking at another person's, the color of their skin, and thinking something different about them just because their skin's different, you know, just doesn't compute with me at all anymore. Not because just because I can't see it, but because on Twitter, unless they posted a picture or something to show you what they look like, he had no idea. And I don't know what you do with guys like this, because I don't side with corporations very much, but if you two wanted to file a complaint against this guy, as in he made threats, which he did, there's no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah.
I'd back him 100%. And I'd want to see him prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And that's my question. Zimmerman down in Florida got into that altercation last night.
That may or may not have involved a firearm, right? It's not entirely clear now.
Well, it's not entirely clear, except his wife said it did. And I know when I was an EMT down there, back about 99 or so, the law changed where if you went out for a domestic violence incident, unless there was no incident at all, and in this case, he punched his father-in-law. That's not a question there. He should have been arrested. There's no doubt he should have been arrested. And I want to know why that didn't happen. And that goes along with the same guy on YouTube. Why hasn't he been charged yet? You know, I'm tired of...
Well, we don't know that he hasn't, but... Remember, Kevin, please... when I say this, it's not a joke. The First Amendment in this country exists now only as a life support system for the religion industry.
That's true.
Now, if a liberal or a progressive or a left-winger or an anarchist or a communist or a socialist or had posted anything even remotely like that, do you think that person would be under a jail? I do.
Oh, yeah. If they'd used
but
the word
see,
Christian...
Right, but as Jack notes, writing from Shreveport, so what was this YouTube guy doing? He was whining and playing the victim. And what do you hear the usual right-wingers doing? Whining and playing the victim. Whether it's the right-wing talk show hosts or their guests or their callers, they drone on and on about how they get the short end of the stick, just like that awful YouTuber, Birds of a Feather. And what they're doing, Kevin, when they do that, is they are insulating themselves against the reality of... of what ought to happen, to wit, that they should be taken to task for the violence of their speech. You know, as Sandra just tweeted to me, white people threatening to kill people again? No way! Way.
Yep. Yep. It's just something that, you know, I fully believe what this guy was saying about there's going to be people shooting up people. Probably will come to reality one day, because people like him promote it so much, it only takes one unbalanced person to do it, and it's like Rush Limbaugh. It's not going to be Rush Limbaugh doing it. You know, it's going to be somebody that's living by himself and doesn't have a job or anything else or anything to lose, and one day, you know, they're going to decide they're going to clean the races or something, and that's what scares me. So, you know, I don't know. I'm at least glad to see that Putin convinced the Syrians to give up their chemical weapons, albeit we'd like to get them to give up their war, both sides. So, well, be very interested to see what the president has to say tonight, which will probably be a whole lot of nothing we don't know already.
It'll be a great speech.
Pretty much guaranteed of that. But
do you understand what I'm getting at when I say it'll be a great speech?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
It's that scene from Henry V, where the warlike Dauphin is walking around, waiting, saying he can't. This is right before Agincourt, saying he cannot wait for the dawn to come for all the English that he will kill, and starts talking about what a magnificent horse he has and how the magnificent horse will ride through the ranks of the English. And finally, the Marshal of France turns to him and says, "Yes, it is a magnificent horse." And then he says to one of his buddies, "And he will eat all that he does kill." It's going to be a great speech.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
it is. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just about to say, I know it's getting to be 7 o'clock or 9 o'clock your time, so I'll go ahead and click off and let you close out the show. But
all right, Kevin, thanks for helping out tonight. We've gotten to the halfway point with your help and that of Sal and that of Kate, and hopefully before too much longer we'll get the rest of the way.
If I can do it, being blind and living on Social Security, folks, I'm hoping you can, who are making a little bit more than me, because this is something that we cherish and want, and it's, you know, there's very few shows left like Bob's, and, you know, it's listener-supported. That's why it's called listener-supported radio, and so we've got to support it, so.
Thank you, Kevin.
Not as compelling as his speech was a minute ago. I can't think of the guy's name you said now, but, you know, gets the job done, I guess. So.
All right. You take care and have a good evening, Kevin.
Take care.
Bye now. Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going. We'll keep going as long as you keep it going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACHECT, ACHEACT.ORG. Go there and learn how you can help us end Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn. See you Monday and hopefully Thursday.